Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
I'm reading from a story in the Tribune the other day. Thomas Cocorellis, age 58, registered to live at the Wayside Cross Ministries. Wayside Cross Ministries, according to its website, offers spiritually based services for people recently released from prison. Who is he? He was part of that Ripper crew. He was released from prison after serving half of a 70-year sentence for the 1982 murder of 21-year-old Lorianne Borowski, Elmhurst woman, who was abducted and killed while walking to work. Initially sentenced to life in prison for the slaying, Cocorellis won a new trial on an appeal. They said there were legal errors made in 1987, and that led to a shorter sentence. This is one of those stories where every now and then someone says, do you remember that? And you say, no, I don't. And you hear it, and it's such a terrible thing. And you think, how was I not more connected to? How do I not remember better the Ripper crew? Cocorellis was among a four-man group believed to have brutally killed as many as 17 women in the early 1980s, and a man who was shot on the street. They sexually mutilated their victims. They used body parts in cult-like religious rituals at the Chicago home of the ringleader. He's listed in Illinois on the Sex Offender Information Registry. Says here, though, this is interesting. He can live without restrictions near schools and parks. Mental health experts who evaluated him during the court proceedings have said he's not sexually violent and has participated in religious ministry in prison, and he stayed out of trouble. So he's out. The family members aren't happy. They reached out to Gloria Allred. She's on a line. Gloria, it's John Williams. You're on WGN. How are you?
Oh, just fine. Hi, John. Yes, nice to talk with you, although I'm so sorry it has to be about this horrendous situation involving this convicted murderer, Thomas Cocorellis. And by the way, not only did he murder or attempt to murder more than 18 women in Illinois, but in addition, they are alleged to have raped and tortured and mutilated, as well as murdered or attempted to murder many of the women. And poor Lorianne Borowski was just trying to, you know, she was going to work. She was about to open up the real estate office in which she was working when she was kidnapped and then raped and tortured. Her left breast was amputated while she was still alive. And she was murdered by Thomas Cocorellis and the satanic cult. You're right. He was tried and convicted of both the rape and murder of both Lorianne and another woman called Linda Sutton. Those convictions were reversed, facing a second trial. That's when he entered a plea of guilty to the murder of Lorianne. In return, the other charges were dismissed. He was then sentenced to 70 years in state prison. But under Illinois sentencing laws at the time, he was only required to serve half of that time. And, of course, the family, the mother of Lorianne, Lorraine, and her brother, Mark, they don't have any memory of being consulted by the prosecutors as to their feelings about a plea deal. Neither of them remembers anyone from law enforcement advising them that Lori's murderer would be able to get out of prison early after serving only half of his sentence. But now they're faced with the fact that on Friday, Thomas Cocorellis walked free in Illinois while their beloved Lorianne lies in Mount Emblem Cemetery in Elmhurst, Illinois, because of the death sentence that Cocorellis inflicted on this innocent, sweet young woman.
What options does the family have now?
None, because what those experts, those doctors that you referred to who examined him, had to find was not that he was a threat then and clearly the reason he's been classified as a sexual offender and must register now in Illinois is because the murder was sexually motivated. So, but the doctors would have to find that now he is someone who, you know, is a risk of harm, and apparently there was not sufficient evidence of that. That doesn't mean he's not a risk. It doesn't mean he is. It just means they couldn't find sufficient evidence to keep him in. So he's got no restrictions at all. He's walking free. With approval, he could even move to another state. But if he moves, he does have to re-register his address. And but he could even contact the family of the murder victim if he wanted to. And that's where I think the law should be changed, because they're victims as well, having lost their daughter, their sister. And the idea that he is where he is with that ministry, by the way, that's in the area where they lived. It's not that far from where they live. It's very, very disturbing to them. And I think there should be, in a situation like this, a no-contact order for life. And that if he would violate that, that he could go to prison.
I don't know if recidivism is the word I'm thinking of, but I wonder what the rate is of men who participate in crimes like this. Do they ever actually get away from those impulses or those crimes, or will they forever be that wired a person?
You know, it's a great question. We don't have the answer. By the way, his brother, who was convicted, he received a death sentence in Illinois. He was part of that. Cocorales, his brother, was part of that satanic cult. He was the last person to be convicted, and then executed in Illinois before the governor in Illinois decided to stop the death sentence. So I guess we won't have to worry about whether he's at risk of harm, because he's 6 feet under.
Is there anything, though? All right, so you would like at least to see the law change so that, well, we can't, there's no double jeopardy here. You can't retry him. You can't put him back in jail because you don't like him. We could change the law, though, to keep him from having any contact with the family members.
Well, yeah, and I think that's the way it should be. Right now, the only time there's a lifetime order, apparently under Illinois law, and I'm so informed by Mr. Berlin, who was kind enough to speak with me. He is, of course, the elected prosecutor in DuPage County. He said the only time there's a lifetime order is for stalking. Well, certainly murder is even worse than stalking. I mean, stalking's pretty bad.
Well, this is where you stalk him and then you kill him. So, I mean, you think that would go without saying. If you can apply it there, you should apply it here. Do you know, has he had or tried to have any contact with any of the victims' families?
Well, we don't, you know, as far as we know, he's not tried to contact the family. But, you know, the mother and the brother, they feel as though now that this man is free and with practically no restrictions, except that he's got to register both his residence and his place of employment if he has one. You know, they feel like they have to walk around looking over their shoulder, afraid that maybe he's going to contact them or suddenly appear at their front door.
Yeah.
I mean, this is, you know, it's bad enough that Lorianne's murderer is walking free while she's never going to be able to breathe the air in Illinois again. Now, her family has to learn that under the law there's no protection afforded to them through the issuance of a no-contact order, which would require, should require, that he stay away from them and refrain from contacting them or face legal consequences if he fails. So that's why I think the law should be changed in Illinois. The Sex Offender Registration Act should be amended to state that whomever's classified as a sex offender is required to have no contact with the victim if the person's still alive, and no contact with the immediate family of the victim if they request it. I mean, isn't it enough, John, that Lorianne was kidnapped, raped, tortured, had her left breast amputated by this satanic cult, probably while she was still alive, and suffered more than 20 ice pick wounds to her body and was murdered, and now the murderer is set free and the law does not even require that he be ordered to stay away from her family who've suffered, and they're going to continue to suffer more than anyone is going to ever know, and they've been brave enough to alert the community about the release of Cocorales, who raped and tortured their precious Lorianne. So they've spoken out because they care about the safety of the community.
I get all of that. And, you know,
it's important that the legislators amend this.
Well, that's the point. I'm glad that you, the soundbite on TV locally was the family being distraught about his release, which is understandable, but there's nothing we can do about that. At least you're talking about something we can do, which is keep him from having contact with them. And there's one other sentence in this story that is of interest to me. Is this correct? It says he can live without restrictions near schools and parks.
It's my understanding that is accurate because he didn't commit the crime against the child. She was 21 years old. She was an adult. And generally, that's a restriction that applies where the sex offender has committed a sex crime against a child.
Oh. So because she was old enough, that's not germane here. So he can live without restrictions near schools and parks. And I guess,
but you know, it's interesting because one of the ways that I understand that the satanic cult was eventually apprehended is because they attacked, and I believe that they raped and somehow thought they murdered a teenage girl, and then they threw her body away, but she survived. And then thank God for that she did, and she was able to identify who had attacked her to the police, and that's how they were able to apprehend the satanic cult.
Gloria Allred's on a phone line. I will continue to follow that story. On a completely different note, just two other quick cases to ask you about.
Sure.
Headline today, this is at TMZ.com. Reporter hires Gloria Allred to go after boxer who kissed her, Kubrat Pulev. I don't know who this guy is, but I watched the video. He's just won a boxing match. Mm-hmm. There's a woman that's interviewing him. They're standing very near each other, and it sounds like the video I saw, she asks a question, he answers. She asks a question, he answers. At one point, they weren't sure if they got the shot right. She re-asks a question. Anyway, they're standing next to each other, and then finally, the interview concludes. She says something about the cut that he suffered on his forehead, on his eye. Is that going to keep him from fighting again? And then he kisses her. He grabs her by the face and gives her a full-on mouth-to-mouth kiss and then walks away. She laughs it off and smiles, but we know that she did not invite that and did not want that. What's the latest on this?
Well, the latest is we did a press conference last week in Los Angeles with Jenny and myself. That's a reporter. And she had conducted a pre-fight interview with boxer Kubrat Pulev the day before, March 22nd. And then on March 23rd, after the boxing match in Costa Mesa, she was interviewing him for the post-fight interview. And that's when, and she was recording it. She was doing a selfie video, which she could see because she had one of those long sticks.
She had her arm extended out to the side, yeah.
Yes, and then suddenly he grabs her face, he kisses her, and we allege that was unwelcome, it was unlawful. And that video has gotten far more than a million views. It went viral. It's been, I think, viewed by the California Athletic Commission. And we called for them to temporarily, at least, or immediately suspend the license Mr. Pulev has to box in California. They did suspend him. And now the only way he's going to get his boxing license back is for him to appear on May 14th before the California State Athletic Commission and show why they should reinstate his boxing license. So this is very serious for him. Under California law, and I'm reading from the Business Professions Code, protection of the public shall be the highest priority for the State Athletic Commission in exercising its licensing, regulatory, and disciplinary functions. And whenever the protection of the public is inconsistent with other interests sought to be promoted, the protection of the public shall be paramount. Well, certainly, John, a member of the press or a reporter or even a blogger, whomever is doing a story about a boxer, That's a member of the public, and they should be protected. And, you know, at first Mr. Pulev tried to say, well, she was a friend. Well, first of all, she denies she was a friend. She just met her the day previously. But even if she were a friend, he can't just decide he's going to kiss her on the lips. He's got to ask, and here she is doing her job, and all of a sudden, he does that. So we're glad they've conducted an investigation. We're glad that pending the hearing in May, that his license is suspended, and we're looking forward to the hearing we plan to attend on May 14th to testify on that issue before the commission.
One last comment from you, Gloria. Do you have anything to say about the Joe Biden kiss on the forehead or on the top of the head of the Lucy Flores, I believe is her name, the woman that was running for lieutenant governor in Nevada?
Right, and now she's a member of the assembly in Nevada. And I think she's been quite clear and articulate in what she's described. Absolutely. I think, frankly, former Vice President Biden needs to keep his hands to himself and not be putting them on women. I mean, if his wife wants to have his hands on her, that's then, you know, that's another thing. She can say that's okay. But as to any other woman, he can't take anything for granted. He has to ask. And I'm glad that she spoke out. And, you know, we can say, well, okay, well, that's minimal. He smelled her hair. He put his hand on her or kissed the back of his neck. I don't know her neck. I don't know what happened. But I'm saying that if he did that, and she seems to be very credible, but if he did that, that was wrong. And she has a right to speak out. And, you know, people have to respect boundaries. And women have to be respected, and their space has to be respected. And, you know, we shouldn't have to wait until a woman is raped, not to say that he would do such a thing, but we shouldn't have to wait to that point or where a man does that to say, okay, this is wrong. They need to start respecting a woman's boundaries from the very beginning. And, you know, I know he said he's hearing, he's listening, and all of that.
He said, we have arrived
at a... he's got to take responsibility for whatever he has done. We've seen videos of him touching other women.
He's always been awkward and inappropriate that way. He thinks it's grandfatherly and affectionate, but it doesn't come across that way at times. Here's his quote. We have arrived at an important time when women feel they can and should relate their experiences, and men should pay attention, and I will. I'm wondering what else. I mean, his behavior needs to change. What else can or should Joe Biden do?
You know, it's not just that, however, that he feels it's appropriate or inappropriate. It's clearly inappropriate to touch a woman without her consent. However a person feels, he's got to think about the impact on the woman, not just on what's going on in his head. Even if he thought it was appropriate or okay or just affectionate or grandfatherly, as you state, John, it's not okay to touch a woman. It's not okay to touch anybody else's daughter without asking. What's so difficult about asking, would it be okay if I gave you a hug? Would it be okay if I gave you a kiss?
Yeah.
I mean, that's all it takes. And by the way, I mean, I think it's fine for a woman to ask a man, is it okay, as well. It goes both ways. But unfortunately, you know, you're right. In the past, some men have taken it for granted that a woman would welcome it. She would like it. Maybe some say she would like even more, whatever. But that's in a man's head. They may be wrong about that assumption about the woman or girl that they're planning to touch.
Yeah, but nobody is suggesting that even this woman herself in her essay was not suggesting it was anything like that. She just thought it was awkward and inappropriate. And nobody's arguing that point here. And I think including Joe Biden, it's just I think it is time, like he said, and as you would agree, that if that it was never appropriate, but now it's not tolerable either. You know, you might have been able to get away with it in the past. You should not have. Now it's not even going to be tolerated. Now you can't get away with it. And
exactly, because you know what? Because women are not willing to suffer in silence anymore. I call this the age of the empowerment of women. I call this the reckoning, and it is the reckoning.
I'm out of time, Gloria.
Okay, well, thank you so much for having me.
It's good to hear your voice. Thanks for joining us.
You too, John.